Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. I'm your host, Sister Jenna. That was Carmen Lunde, Grace, a quality that really I think is very required at this time. It's an age in which we are bringing the best of ourselves forward. And I come to you on the show today with a very beautiful story and something that has impacted my life tremendously. And if you've had a chance to listen to an interview I did with a guest called Maxwell Jones, then you'll connect to what I'm about to share with you. A few weeks ago, I went to relocate Sister Gita from her condo in Florida, and I bumped into someone who was relocating in the building as well. His name was Max. Max and I ended up in a wonderful conversation, only to find out that Max was terminal. And Max's energy was as if he's just ready. He's ready. From the Midwest, and he didn't want to be in the cold anymore, and he just wanted to spend his remaining time in a place that was warm and beautiful. Max and I had a lot of exchanges in the 3 days that we were together. I even had a chance of taking him on Fisher Island to visit a few friends of mine to just see beautiful things in life. But I have to tell you, everyone, something that I've taken away from Max is my encounter with Max, and I've been talking a lot about it, was that Max has just reminded me to keep loving, to just live a life of love, transparency, and to kind of find ways on how to keep my heart and my conscience clean. Because Max walks with his Bible, and he speaks a lot about God and Jesus, and I love Jesus, and of course you all know I love God. And every time I find myself in a situation where I might be expressing a little bit of a lovelessness, I remember Max's life. Lost his son 5 years ago, his wife 4 years ago. I was diagnosed with terminal cancer 2 years ago. I mean, this is somebody who's supposed to be really, really angry at God, angry at life, angry at everything. And he's like, no, I've lived a good life. This is what it is. I'm already told how it's going to happen when I know that I'm going to leave my body, and this is the steps that I'm going to take. So do we all know what happens when we die? I was thinking about that question because in my teachings of Raja Yoga meditation taught by the Brahma Kumaris, and I believe it at least 90%, and I tell you that I leave that 10% for room for growth, that I know that I am a spirit, that I am a soul. I'm so sure of that, that there is an energy functioning in our bodies, in this costume. I know that there is an expression of this subtle energy expressing itself all the time through our subtle bodies, right? Through our physical bodies. And I know that based on the journey that I've had, and I think many of us are beginning to explore the concept of previous births, that there are stories recorded there, that there are feelings recorded there that we have resolved and some that we haven't resolved, and the ones that we really haven't resolved show up in different ways. They sort of repeat themselves in our present incarnation. But lately, you know, after meeting Max, I keep telling people, what if this was your last day? How would you want to live? Now, do we go back to this world of light and just stay there for all eternity? Or do we come back carrying the gifts of the way that we've lived before? I believe unless my energy gets to a place where it's absolutely the embodiment of a loving, godly energy, I will go up. I will be in that eternal space with the divine. But if for whatever reason there are still unresolved issues, somehow those unresolved issues will pull me back into matter. I will get another body and I will begin to play out another story and just continue the story. And each experience, we're learning so much about it. How much do I have faith in that? 90%. But the 10% is also room for growth. I could change tomorrow. But I think about it, that can somebody be born and just live for 2 days and go back to heaven or go up to the world of light? Can someone leave their bodies in the womb of a mother and go back up to light? Can someone who lives for 20 years, can someone who has just been born with nothing great happening in their lives and their whole life has been a struggle, and at 40 or 50 they just go up to the light and that's their... I feel like there is something more connected to a need to understand what is the soul? How has it been living? Should I now make choices and changes and shifts that if I do die and if I do leave my body today, that even if I come back, because there's still a few unresolved issues, I will be bringing a lot of good deeds with me. If for whatever reason I've lived such an embodied life of love, then I will live a very, very unattached life because the love will have been the force, and maybe that's the real freedom, that we will go back to source, right where we came from. Food for thought, because I feel like these conversations are really important for us to begin to find some grace, some freedom, passage. And today it gives me pleasure to invite our guest on the air, Christina Rasmussen, who is an internationally recognized grief educator and author of Second First, and her new book, Where Did You Go? A Life-Changing Journey to Connect with Those We've Lost. She is the founder of the Life Reentry Institute, Second First, and Star Letters, and Christina has helped countless people break out of what she coined the waiting room of grief to rebuild their lives through their life reentry model. Yet she discovered that even as her students rebuild their lives and thrive again, many are still left with the same burning questions. What happens when we die? Are we capable of connecting to those who have passed on? Christina herself wrestled with these spiritual questions, and now her mission is to change the way we grieve and the way we live, how we define our potential in this life and thereafter. She has just been featured on Woman Working to Do Good in the White House blog, and her work has also appeared on NPR, ABC News, The Washington Post, and also MariaShriver.com. Today we welcome Christina Rasmussen. Hello, Christina. Welcome to the air.
Sister Jenna, so good to meet you and love listening to you in the last 10 minutes. Amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. It's such an interesting conversation. I met someone who impacted my life really deeply. And this is not to say that my life hasn't been an impact, that, you know, I haven't been feeling these feelings before. But there are certain scenes that you come across and they just really put a really amplified pause on your life. And now I just want to live my life every day as if it's my last, so that I can try to keep bringing the best of me forward.
Yeah, it is when tragedy and loss took place in my life, Sister Jenna, I couldn't believe how painful it was to experience grief and to experience tragedy. And I searched for meaning, and I searched for the whys, and why was I to experience so much hardship and difficulty at such a young age? And I questioned everything. Why was I here? Why was he here when my husband passed away? Why am I going through this experience? What is my purpose? What is my destiny? These questions, I believe, everyone should be asking until they get answers.
I get that. So I know that in 2006, a very tragic event occurred, and it changed the trajectory of your life immensely. Mm-hmm. Could you let our listeners know a little bit about the event, but also how it impacted you?
Yes. I was just living my life like a regular person. I, at the time, was a stay-at-home mom with two very young children living with my husband. We had just moved from California to the Boston area, and a few weeks thereafter, he was diagnosed with terminal colon cancer. At the time of his diagnosis, he was only 31 years old. I was 30 years old. Our youngest daughter was 9 months old, and our oldest was 2.5. And I couldn't breathe. I couldn't even imagine a life without him. I remember thinking to myself, how am I ever going to survive his death? To be honest with you, I wanted to be the one dying. It was much harder for me to be the one staying alive than me dying. Then we spent the next 3.5 years at Dana-Farber and traveled the world trying to find a cure, save his life. But at the age of 35, in 2006, July 2006, he passed away. And I have to tell you, the devastation that I felt and the grief that I experienced, it was almost like it showed me the pain that lives in the hearts of millions of people. And, you know, the really ironic thing was that I studied grief. I did my thesis on the stages of bereavement, and nothing could have prepared me for what I experienced. Honestly, I wanted to scream to the world and say, how can you keep going around and around every day? How can the sun keep rising when so many people are suffering? So many people. I was furious. And
it was like Ramdas. Yes. You know, Ramdas, when he had his stroke,
yes,
he realized that all that spiritual wisdom that he was carrying meant nothing. He was like, I'm going to die. And
yeah,
it was a big awakening for Ramdas when he realized there is more here. So we could study all we want and have all the best language to what we're doing, but
yeah,
until you're really in it, it's a completely different thing.
Yes, it is.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for sharing that, because a lot of people experience loneliness and deep sadness during this time of the year, especially when you've lost someone that you really care about. You recently posted a blog entitled "The 10 Things I Wish I Knew About the Holidays After Loss." Could you share with a little bit more about that?
You've done your research, yes,
mm-hmm,
and it was very popular, and I believe one of the reasons why a blog like this was shared and read so many times is because during this time of the year, people think that everyone is happy. And in that blog, I shared how my books, my first book and this book, are all coming just before the holidays. But over the years, we found that a lot of booksellers, a lot of organizations kind of shut down the door on books like these because, according to them, they believe these books are not festive, to use their word, actually, and that we don't want to depress people. And on the contrary, these are the times when people who have lost someone are actually experiencing grief 100 times more. They're in pain. They don't like to listen to the holiday music. They don't like to go to the shops. They want to hide. I'm sure the suicide rate is much higher during the holidays. And I am furious as to the fact that we don't make space for validating, acknowledging, and understanding the people who are grieving during the holidays. They are in a lot of pain, Sister Jenna, a lot of pain. There are millions of people who are suffering 100 times over during this time of the year. The suicide rate is much higher. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And when I write a book like that, the one that I just wrote, I get letters and letters and letters from people who are like, I tell them, as you saw in the blog, do not go to the dinner that you're invited if you don't want to go. Do not buy presents for people you don't want to buy presents for. You know, I tell them to just be themselves and live their own life, because, you know, pleasing other people when you're grieving and going through a very difficult time is actually making things much worse.
So tell us some of the 10 steps.
I would say that, you know, sometimes I feel that when we get an invitation for dinner, we should be happy about that. We should feel as if, you know, we should go. We should go to this thing. Hey, you've been sitting here all by yourself. And normally I would say to someone, please do go out. I call those plug-ins. I call them tiny little steps towards life. But when we are plugging in or taking a step towards a dinner that is going to cause us more sorrow and more loss, I would highly recommend staying at home or going to the beach. Or if someone emailed me and said, I took my sister and we got on a plane last year and we flew off to a holiday spot. I'm not saying everyone should do that. Maybe some people can't afford it. But I would choose wisely the things that we want to do rather than what we are expected to do.
Wonderful. That's great to hear, because it is challenging. You know, you had that love, and now it's like, I don't know where to channel the love that I have left over in me. Let's talk about life reentry model. It's a fantastic form. It's set to introduce a new model of grief based on the science of neuroplasticity. Tell us a little bit about how this works.
Oh, Sister Jenna, I have so many things to say about this. When I first started my grieving journey, my mourning journey, my journey of sorrow and loss, it was right. It was supposed to be this way. You know, I talked about my story. I shared about the pain in my heart, and I was grieving. And people start that journey just like this, and it's just right. However, as time goes by, and as we actually move forward into our journey, when we stay in this repetitive grief identity of what happened to us, and we think of ourselves through the lenses of that event for a prolonged period of time, we actually create a loop inside our brain, and we never make it to a brand new life. So I coined the term the waiting room. It is the place between two lives, the life we left behind because we couldn't have that life anymore because of the law, and the life we could have, but instead we are stuck in the middle in what people say, you know, give it time, time heals a wound, wait, wait, and wait, and we're waiting. And as a matter of fact, millions of people die in the waiting room because they don't realize this is not their second chapter. It's just a waiting space. And their second life or third life, however many losses and experiences they've had, is waiting for me out that door. I have received over the years, over the last 5 years since I wrote the first book, thousands mm-hmm. of emails for people realizing that they're not living their life, that they're stuck in the waiting room, and they freed themselves. It's been an incredible journey. Yeah,
I bet that was a good point. You know, some of us, it just takes us longer to get over it. There's something in the
energy We never get over it.
There's something sitting in the soul that the question is, you know, sometimes some of us are just holding on to the loss or the grief for a really mm-hmm. long time. And let's say that you recognize someone's in that state. Is there something specific that you would suggest to them? Mm-hmm. Is there a way we can accelerate folks to just move on? A little bit, not quicker, but just move on now. It's been 20 years. It's been 30 years.
Yeah. We actually had people come to us 20, 30 years later, and we have to help them understand that by moving on, we're not leaving the people we've lost behind. And that is a very important thought for them to know. A lot of people feel guilt and shame by moving on, by loving again, by laughing again, by really living their life. So first we have to talk to them about the fact that it is, since they're still here on earth, they're still in body, they're still here to live life and to learn and to live out their destiny. There should be no guilt, no shame. Another thing that is really important is what I call a grief trance. A lot of people are so stuck in the event and what happened that actually they're re-traumatizing themselves. The brain, the brain actually, people say, you know, heal your heart, but the brain is such a significant part of that healing process. And we have to help the brain create new maps, new connections, and new ways of perceiving life and the self. And in order to do that, we have to first see what is invisible. Actually, invisible loss and invisible grief, the grief that comes because of the primary loss, is much harder to re-enter from.
I love that. That's great to know. Let's talk about your new book, Where Did You Go?, which was endorsed by Dr. Raymond Moody Jr. and Lynn MacTaggart.
Yes.
There are many books on afterlife, but why did you choose to write another one on this topic? How is your book different?
You know, I love this question so much because it allows me to explain that this is a very different book on the topic, the afterlife. When I decided to write it, I knew that I could not write a book just telling people why I think there is an afterlife, why I think we don't die, what are the theories and the facts out there. I wanted to write a book that allowed people to have their own experience. So the book is a gateway. The book is an experiential journey for people so they can have their own experience. And of course, this risks a lot because I could just write the nicest, most beautiful book and make great arguments. But if people are not experiencing what the journeys are about, then they can't believe it. But I had to take the chance. I do believe we don't have to have a near-death experience to know that there is an invisible world that we actually immersed in. We don't have to have a near-death experience to connect with the consciousness of the person we lost, and we don't have to have a near-death experience to feel joy and peace and blissfulness. We can experience those things here and now. And I want to add just one more thing here. I did two pilot classes prior to writing this book and in the middle of writing this book, and tested out the exercises and experiences. And I knew, and I had made this decision, if these experiences were not felt and held and experienced by other people, then I wasn't going to write this book. Just because I was feeling this and I was experiencing this, it didn't mean I should write a whole book for the whole world. But what we discovered was incredible. Actually, it was even more powerful than my wildest dreams and expectations, so much so that I actually, very transparent and honest always, I worried that this book would eclipse my life changer work, Sister Jenna. I was concerned because their life was changing so much faster with going through this process.
That was amazing. What do you think happens after death then, after we die? How do we define it? I think death and life are the same. It's just that you let go of one, you open up another, and your energy continues. Yeah. But how do we define death and what happens after it?
I love this. First of all, you said something in the beginning of this interview before I came on about that 10%. And I just have to say, I love that. And I'm going to quote you in the next few interviews and say, Sister Genesis, and I really, really love how you said it. 90% of me and a big part of me discovered through the process of this book and the experience of this book that actually I went out to find death and I found life. That blew me away. I literally went out to discover what happens when we are dead. Where did he go? I mean, like really, that was the question that I had. And as I went through that gateway and portal and exited this physical reality that, honestly, according to a lot of findings out there, this is a hologram. This is the translation of light. We are light. We are vibrating strings of light. And this is not just some, you know, nice words to use. We are made of light. And we project a hologram, a reality here. So someone said, a physicist called Robert Lanza, he said this word, they will stay with me forever. He said, when we die in the reality of others, but we don't die in our own reality.
Wow, that's powerful. You said, it's very, very powerful because we've been so conditioned to live our lives always outside of ourselves and not in the reference that you made earlier about light. So when you say that we are light, would you decode that as when I've lived my life very purely with a lot of grace, positivity? In other words, for me, light has this vibration of love and peace and purity and wisdom in my choices and my thinking and in the way I interact with others. And the darkness is when those qualities are in absence, that I'm yelling, screaming, I'm arrogant, I'm greedy, I'm manipulative. So are you saying that, you know, it's really about living more in that quality of light? Because I know that a lot of us tend to kind of get confused when we talk about light.
Say
like,
that.
What do you mean?
So this is actually such a great question. It's such an important question. Actually, educating the world to understand that when we say you're light, it's not just a metaphor or it's real. And so to answer your question specifically, we come from light. We are light source. Now, when we when our projection of reality through the brain, each brain translates light into a holographic image. So every time we are translating light in a higher vibration, we are then in that peace state that you just described, and we connect with the whole much more. That's why it feels so much joyful and blissful. And we start to view the universe as, you know, an unbroken whole. And the universe or light source, it is a non-local experience. I know you know this so well. So when we are vibrating in physical matter, and I know you know matter and energy is the same thing. So when we are vibrating in this higher light vibration, we are connected to our source and where we come from.
Yeah.
And if you could see me, I'm moving my arms around in the air because I'm really passionate about this.
I could.
So thank you for that question.
So I could, because in the book you also refer to the temple world. And does someone need to have a spiritual or religious belief to visit the temple world? Or who or what is God to you?
Yeah, thank you for this question. In the last few days, I have received some emails and comments from people. When I mention the temple world, they're referring specifically to the Bible, and they say, Christina, where does this belong in the Bible, and so on. My own perception, opinion, and belief about a higher intelligence, God, universe, is that there is a higher intelligence, and we should be allowed to call it different names and believe in different religions. Everyone should have, you know, the right an approach to the one that they feel closer to their faith. I believe faith in an intelligence provides us with a higher vibration of light. When we believe in God, in Jesus, they're vibrating. That intelligence is vibrating much higher than the physical matter intelligence, the physical matter dimension, the holographic dimension. So when we connect to that source, automatically we are operating from a very higher level. So I believe, I went on a journey to get here. I didn't want to just get here believing in a higher power through the versions of others. I had to find my own way. I named the journey to there, the temple journey. And I have to tell you, the funniest thing, it was almost as if I had no choice. I didn't know when I named it the temple journey. Isn't that strange, the strangest thing? Like,
yeah.
I knew there was a message, a meaning, that when I go in that journey, that my angels, my guides, my God, like, I had to name it that. And I knew I had to, not for any reason, not for any religion. It's just what it was.
Right.
And I trusted that. Yeah.
Beautiful. It's interesting how sometimes something tragic can wake us up in ways that we would have never been woke.
Never.
And
never.
The fact that, you know, you've written this book and you've also explored, you know, going into this whole realm of dying and ended up realizing, I really love living. I mean, it's the paradox of it all.
Yes.
How are you trying to change the way we actually view death?
I hope that somehow this book, my talks, my interviews, whatever I'm able to connect with even one soul, to help everyone understand that death is not the end. Death is a door. My journey to the temple starts with a door. And Sister Jenna, I fought that door. I kept saying, this is too simplistic. This is not, I'm not going to have a doorway. And I literally had a dream that night.
Yeah.
And I dreamt for the first time and the last time that God came to me, God, and said, and he grabbed me by the hand, took me through an arch doorway and said, I am here to take you to a new direction. And I will never forget that dream ever. And I woke up and I'm like, fine, it's a door. I believe that death is just a doorway to a new room, a much bigger room. And if only, and I know how hard it is to change that, if only by experiencing our loved one's consciousness and having moments where we cannot doubt that they still exist, I do believe we will see death as a continuation of the journey. It's just a different one, a different
and
type
what
of
did
journey.
God look
a higher
like?
Level of what? Consciousness. Oh,
what did God look like? Because you said, and he took my hand and took me through the door. So I'm so curious. What did God look like when he came to take you through that door?
You're the first person who's asking me this question, what he looked like. And I'm so glad so I could answer it. You know, I can't believe, but he looked, so I could see me and God from as if I was viewing me and him from afar, from behind, and I could see us walking through the gateway, that doorway, and he was taller than me a little bit. He was on my left side, and our shadows and reflections, just he looked, which is surprising to me, human, and my guess as I thought about this, because this dream took place 2 years ago when I was writing the proposal of this book, and I was starting the class. My guess is that, you know, and this is just, is that 10% that I don't know, is that God came like this because he had to take me by the hand, literally, and walk me through that doorway. And it was not, it wasn't a light, you know, and he had to walk by my side through that experience. That is my guess, but I would love your opinion about this. I would love it.
No, I think that where we are internally, the way that we receive the energy of God is useful at that time. It might change, but my rendition of God now is this enormous awareness of energy that is conducive to what an ocean energy level would feel like when it's in the state of love or peace or purity.
Yes.
So for me,
yes.
God is this profusely unlimited capacity of love and peace,
yes.
and purity and wisdom,
yeah.
and joy. And so that energy is what pulls what I'm suspecting. Remember, I'm still just 90% there. So my
yes.
10%, I have no idea.
I love it so much.
But,
yes.
but when
yes.
I've done my work here, that's the energy that should pull me up and take me back to that eternal place for a while.
Yeah.
And so for me, God doesn't necessarily have a form, but if there was a particular creation that I resonate with, that I'm deeply connected with at a soul and a heart level, that particular creation might show up as a friend, a companion with me on the journey, like Jesus or Muhammad or
yeah.
Buddha or Daddy
yeah.
Janki, or could be your grandmother, your grandfather,
yeah.
somebody who you really received that wisdom for, and you went, please, I want to go with you too, because we're going there.
Yeah.
You know, they're like that support. So that's how I look at it right now at this point in my life, and I feel comfortable with it right now. Christina,
yeah.
are you doing any book tours? Are you going to be in the Washington, D.C. area? Are there any closing remarks that you'd like to offer? Because I would actually love to speak more on this topic. I think it requires even further exploration
yes.
because it's rich. But as you know,
yeah.
we're on the limit. So, I know, right? So are there any book signings coming up? Are you coming to the D.C. area?
I would love to come to the D.C. area, actually, and this is not official yet, but I will be teaching this work at the George Washington University in early 2020. We just found out, so I'm very excited about that. I'm very proud of the Temple Journey and the work. I have book signings over in California right now, and there will be more on the East Coast, as I love the East Coast, in early 2019. And also Unity Church will be collaborating with them, Omega Institute. There are a lot of exciting opportunities to bring this work into the world. And I want to end by saying this to everyone who's listening. I do believe there is a heaven that is made of this invisible energy, that it comes from this two-dimensional realm of pure purity. And we are being created by that two-dimensional world of the heavens, of light, of vibrating streams of light. And that is the place where we get to have physical matter from. So when people, when scientists actually doubt this place, when people find it hard to believe, I want to remind everyone that we can't see all of the light. We only see a very tiny portion of this electromagnetic spectrum. You know, the world is made up of light that we cannot see, number one. And number two, we cannot detect sound less than 20,000 hertz. And there is a lot more out there. So there is proof, a lot of factual proof, that there is an invisible world of energy that we are immersed in and we come from.
Mm-hmm.
Now all we have to do is add our experiencing to it, and I believe that's what's going to take our step further into the belief that death is not real, that we live an eternal life.
That's beautifully, a great note to end on. Christina Rasmussen, thank you so much. It's been a delight, and looking forward to us connecting in the future.
This has been incredible, and thank you for the work you do, Sister Jenna. I hope we meet one day in person and have a longer conversation. Thank you. Thank you
Absolutely.
So much for having me on your show.
Happy holidays. Take care.
Take care, Sister Jenna. Bye.
So folks, you've heard it right here. Thoughts about, you know, where do we go from here? What happens to us? Sometimes in the fear of the running away from death, we actually might just bump into real living. If you'd like some more information on Christina Rasmussen, you can go to Christina Rasmussen, that is CHRISTINARASMUSSEN, or go to lifeentry.com for more information on her book. And, of course, we can't end the show without putting our beautiful Sister Gita on to find out what readings she might have for us today to close off our show. Sister Jenna, Sister Gita, what do you have for us today?
Good day to all of you. Om Shanti is a greeting of peace. Our original nature is indeed peace, love, purity, all of these things. Now, taken from the book Companion of God by Daddy Janki. Daddy Janki is known to have the most powerful mind in the world, and being in her company, you feel as though you're under the canopy of God's protection. Now, mercy. God is known as the ocean of forgiveness, and an experience of His mercy makes you feel that you have made a best friend for life. Peace makes its home in your heart. When you accept God's mercy for you, your perspective on life changes. It is God's merciful vision that allows you to see your potential for perfection. Then it becomes your turn to be merciful to yourself. Mercy for the self means striving to be true to that image of perfection. By drawing from God whatever power is needed, we can become whatever we wish. We wish to become as pure and happy and peaceful and loving as we were originally, and it will return to us. God's mercy is wah, wah, wah. Wonderful. Thank you. Have a grand, merciful, peaceful day. Om Shanti.
Thank you so much, Sister Gita. That was lovely as usual. Well, remember, everyone, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And we really are here to love each other the same. I'm happy to say that my new meditation CD has been released called Your Inner World by Sister Jenna. So you should be able to get that on iTunes, Amazon, or CD Baby. I think it'll be a great gift for the holidays. So I look forward for you diving in and getting that together. Well, shine your light so bright that absolutely no one around you would feel like they need to be so dim. Take care, everyone. Here is Reach Out and Touch Somebody's Hand by Dinah Ross. Take care.
I'm Sister Jenna. You've been listening to America Meditating Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Did you enjoy that conversation? Because you can also listen to it on Spotify or in iTunes, 24/7, anytime, anywhere. I do trust we all have inner power to become our very best. When we listen with curiosity to learn more, we grow. So thanks so much for tuning in, and do be easy on yourself. Take care.